Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Everyone, and welcome to Gather Round. I'm Ra, your host, with Anna Martefio, and tonight we do have a full show to be followed by Feed Your Head. So that's a whole other show, and on it tonight we have P.E. Nolan and Brad Holhut, also known as Co, also known as A-Bear. And they'll be on talking about the Burning Man. This is a week-long village. Actually, it's a city put up in the desert in Nevada every summer and then dismantled. So they'll be talking about that. Tonight we have on Gather Round Mike Trout, who's running for the 21st Congressional District in Florida. And, of course, any politician has gazillions of issues. But tonight he's going to be basically talking about foreclosures, which is an issue close to his heart, I think. And we also then, at the half-hour mark, have Sarit Jackson's views on the world. She'll be talking about different things happening in Palestine and Israel. One thing will be the disappearance of the three Israeli teenagers. So just keep tuned with us, and until Mike comes on, there's a couple things that I wanted to go over. Here in Ileana, let me tell you, this Mercury retrograde is really, really making itself known, not in bad ways, just in strange ways. So those of you who aren't familiar with it, when Mercury goes retrograde three times a year for about 3 weeks each time, issues with communications and transportations can get sort of sticky. So I think that, along with changes we're all going through planetarily wise, it's making for an interesting year. And I know Gwen Holdenberry from Here Be Monsters is in chat right now, and I know she's been feeling it too. So, you know, don't give up. Don't think that this is, you know, going to last forever. Things change, and usually for the better. So keep that in mind. I found out something today that I don't know if Sarit's going to have time to mention this or talk about it, but Johann Breyer, an 89-year-old U.S. citizen, has been arrested. I believe it's in Philly. He's on the East Coast. For war crimes dating back to World War II and the Birkenau camp in Germany. Now, he's the oldest person that the U.S. has ever prosecuted for the Nazi crimes. But Ephraim Zubli, who is the head Nazi hunter at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Jerusalem, says that Breyer should be extradited to Germany. And that's what the Germans are wanting, because evidently about 3 years ago, they set out on a program to get tough with the remaining Nazis that they had in their country. To me, it is so strange that the U.S. will do something like this. They're going to arrest him, and possibly, although he's 89 and quite frail, he may be extradited to Germany. You know, the U.S., after World War II, recruited all these Nazis to come and work for NASA and other government agencies. So this is a bit hypocritical or two-sided blade. I don't know what you would call it. But that's my just a flash update for today. It's been making me think. And
also, I saw a quote. Some of you may have seen this many times, but it's from Pete Seeger. My friend John Ward posted this. I love this. He says, if it can't be reduced, reused, repaired, rebuilt, refurbished, refinished, resold, recycled, or composted, then it should be restricted, redesigned, or removed from production. And I think that that is just wonderful because, you know, here I talk frequently about simplifying your life and getting going green and staying green. So I love that quote. And this week, I did something I've been aiming to do for so long, because as those of you who listen, you know I'm getting rid of stuff I don't need. And I've had, just because I love denim, I have saved jeans that are like way too big for me, and they're holy enough, not like the fashionable holes, just holy enough that, you know, I'm not going to give them away. I mean, nobody's going to want them. So I deconstructed them. I saw something about doing this and, you know, saving every piece. I mean, there's a few pieces that I ended up throwing out, but, you know, now the challenge is, okay, so exactly what am I going to do with this? But I cut them up. I have a couple really good zippers that are strong that I can use. And the pockets that I salvaged are really good for like dust mitts kinds of things. Like, okay, I can use them and throw them out or use them and wash them, depending. But it was just fun to go ahead. And also the heavy seams will be staking up some things in my garden. So, you know, there's always a use for something. We don't have to just automatically throw things out. My garbage people... Really, I don't get my money's worth, it seems, for garbage, but my garbage and recycling and sewer and water is all together. So, you know, that's the way it goes. But I do get my money when it comes to recycling, my money's worth, because I recycle so much. And I suggest that if you don't have recycling in your town, see if you can get it. One of these days it will be required everywhere, and I can't wait. Till then, I mean, I think that's just, you know, way, way late in coming. But that's just a couple things I wanted to mention. Another thing is, today I bio-spotted my felines. We do this once a year, and it's like an over-the-counter, except I buy it from Drs. Foster and Smith in Wisconsin. Just Google them. They'll send a catalog. They have a catalog online. And this is one of those, you know, that says 30 days, whatever. For several years now, I do it once in the summer, and it holds. So I really hate putting any kind of toxic thing on the back of their little necks. But I just tell myself, well, it's better than them having fleas. And I totally believe that. So... It went a little smoother today than it has some past times, so that made me feel good. I mean, that's one a positive during Mercury retrograde. So it's like, okay, we can do this. And I know that Gwen from DaughtersOfIsis.com has been working on something for canines and fleas in Florida, because I've heard from several people that they have just been horrendous down there. So you might want to give a look or a call to her and see what she can, you know, help you with there. Because we have fleas in Ileana here, but I've just heard that the ones in Florida have been terrible. And this all has to do with climate change, because, you know, natural enemies and all are changing, and it's amazing. We don't understand how far-reaching this is. But I'm going to stop this now and go to our guest. And so any thing you may be wondering about foreclosures, I think he's going to be able to tell you about. And before, hello, Mike.
Hi, Roseanne. How are you today?
Hi. I'm going to say one thing before we get started, because Gwen just sent me something saying that for felines, pennyroyal hemp and clove oils, 20 drops in 4 ounces of pure water, and mist the whole area of the animal for the canine flea problem in Florida. So, Mike, you're in Florida. Mike Trout is in the 21st Congressional District. You're in Boca Raton, right?
Yeah, we're in Boca, yeah.
Yeah. And
actually, the district stretches all the way up to Wellington, which is like Southern Boulevard, and pretty much straddles U.S. Highway 441 down almost to Atlantic Boulevard in Broward County. So it's like a long, long, skinny district.
Oh, okay. Is that a new district, Mike? I mean, relatively new?
It is supposedly a new district, but it doesn't look much different than the other district. But, you know, they just had this redistricting trial that finished up last week, and we're waiting to hear from the judges. And they could absolutely say this is an unlawful district because, you know, the districts were supposed to be redrawn to be compact. You know, there's nothing compact about this district. It's like a long, you know, it's like a caterpillar.
So
we don't know, really. You know, it could throw a real wrench into the November elections, depending on what the judges say, you know, the Supreme Court, so, of Florida.
Well, and nothing personal, but I really think you have a lousy governor, Rick Scott.
I don't take it personally.
just from everything I've heard about him, it's like, oh, my God. But, okay, so you're saying that the district, that they may want them to be squarer or rounder.
Being compact, you know, that's sort of, you know, what you're going to end up with. You've either got to have a circle or a square would be the absolute most compact shape.
Right.
And so it's very hard to tell what they're going to do, you know, whether they're going to be cautious or whether they're going to be radical and revolutionary and say, hey, the voters, you know, this was a referendum of the voters. The voters wanted compact districts. And instead, you know, there's some indication of gerrymandering.
Right. Yeah. Well, now, they can't do that before your election, can they? I mean...
Yeah, they could.
And totally change it?
I'm like, okay, well, come what may. You know, let's...
I know, you pretty much roll with...
I can roll with the punches, you know.
Right, you do. You just roll right with it. You have some interesting ideas on several things, and Brian Stetton and I have had you on Progress Toward Democracy before when you had a totally new proposal for voters, and I really was taken aback. I mean, it's good, but tonight we're going to concentrate. We don't have a lot of time, but we're going to concentrate on the foreclosure issues. This seems to be pretty near and dear to your heart, isn't it?
Yes, it really is, Roseanne. And the thing is that the mainstream press just seems to have forgotten all about it now because, you know, truthfully, the numbers are down, but the crisis still exists, you know. And nobody's come up with a solution. Okay, maybe they're going to put some bankers in jail, maybe, who knows what, but... You know, nobody in Congress has come up with any kind of a plan, you know, to really remediate it, to fix it for the future, for the present and the future. And so that's why I'm being punched. And the guy I'm running against is a real estate attorney, and he hasn't come up with any kind of a plan. So I've got to still keep talking to everybody that'll listen about foreclosures.
Right. And you actually, I mean, you've had a friend who went through it, a personal friend. And so
lots. Somebody on my street was working with one of these, I guess, shyster, sham, whatever, loan modification companies, and was paying them, you know, to help them with a loan mod. And apparently that company turned around and bought the house from out from under them. So there's just all kinds of like criminal behavior, you know, it's predatory, you know, it's puts families out on the street, veterans out on the street. I think we talked about it before. You know, the one story that I'll just never forget is the veteran that I met, you know, the last time I was campaigning. And I just always think about him. He was like 17 years into a mortgage, you know, it was nearly paid off. And he got cancer, got sick, and so, of course, his finances got a little bit behind. You know, and I'll name names, J.P. Morgan Chase, you know, came along and just stole his house, you know. You know, the guy's built nearly full equity. He had 17 years of a 20-year mortgage, you know, and that's the ones they love to steal, you know.
Sure.
Because they just take house and equity and everything and leave the homeowner out on the street. So my thing is, you know, you can't stop foreclosures. What I want to stop is foreclosures of primary residences. That's also not investment properties, not second homes, not, you know, any of that. We can't, you know, obviously we can't do that. But we can stop, we can protect the sanctity of the home in this country and say, you know, there's still other remedies for lenders. You know, you can still, a lender who has a borrower go in default or whatever, can still put a lien on a property so that say the homeowner doesn't, you know, sell and run away without paying them what they owe. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. They lent the money and they need some protection. They can also negotiate with the homeowner. Okay, you paid for 17 years on this house. It's worth X amount. We'll offer you this much if you're in financial straits, you know, maybe we can buy it from you at a fair cost where you can get out from under a property that's maybe too much for you. Mm-hmm. And without just creating total economic ruin for people.
Okay. I like that idea of no foreclosures on the primary residence, because that does throw people totally. People who have kids, they may have to take them out of the school district and do this and that. And we hear way too much about people and their children living out of cars and, you know, kids going to school like that. I don't feel really all that bad for the banks or the lenders. I just can't. But I know that a lot of people also are underwater homeowners. And that just seems like a horrible place to be. Would you like to explain what that means?
Well, underwater means pretty much that you owe more than the house is worth, whether you paid too much for it or whether the devaluation of the market affected it so much.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still paying, you know, $100,000. So we're talking about 1970s numbers, paying $100,000 on a property for 30, for instance, you know, I mean, so, you know, there were programs that were supposed to, you know, help homeowners by reducing those principles. And it makes more economic sense to do that and, you know, save somebody's home than to do all these foreclosures, which affect the whole neighborhood. You know, it just doesn't just affect the person who's foreclosed on, because now, you know, your neighbors on both sides are, you know, sitting next to a vacant house. It's, you know, susceptible to vandalism and, you know, everything else. And it affects everybody's property values. It's not good for anybody.
Sure.
It's only been for the banks. who've just, you know, kept going, kept stealing people's properties, and it's time for it to stop.
Well, now I did look up some places people have between like 6 to 7 months, maybe 180 to 200 days to either settle it or get out of their homes. So it's not like the sheriff's going to knock on the door and just move your things out. But
it's from state to state, really, though, Roseanne. It's not the same in Florida.
Yeah.
But, you know, Florida has its own set of foreclosure procedures. And Georgia has there. So in some cases, yeah, they come along and pretty fast. You know, as fast as your head can spin, people find themselves out on the street. So, and then there's some, like, California has passed some laws that, you know, are meant to somewhat protect the homeowner. But still, there's not a whole solution. And again, talking about what you were talking about underwater, another part of this is there has to be a whole housing solution for the country. You know, we're signatories to the United Nations Human Rights Declaration, and, you know, one part of that is that housing is a human right. So if housing is a human right, then it's the Congress's job to craft laws that are going to, that are going to guarantee that we have housing for everybody in this country. You know, and it doesn't mean, you know, a big fat condo or a mansion, you know, on Park Avenue, but it means decent housing, you know. And now we can print houses. They have these big construction printers. And I was just reading yesterday there's a Chinese company that can print out 10 homes in 24 hours. They can just print them. They just pour the concrete in, and it prints out a house. And they can apparently print a whole very small house in about 3 hours because they say they can do 10 in a 24-hour period. So, you know.
Well, I read an article that said that at least some of these were just about $5,000.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
I think that the cost with profit for the company that's doing, of course, that's in China, but, I mean, you know, you bring that technology here and, you know.
Yeah, can you imagine?
It's the same thing here. You know? So it's not actually, a costly thing. And, you know, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, you know, the country was producing a lot of, you know, properties, low-income housing. You know, alternatives for people, and you know, we pretty much got away from that, but we're going to have to get back to it to get all these people back in a home.
Well, that was like after I think after the Second World War, there were a lot of GI loans, I believe, out.
Sure.
And
GI loans and FHA loans, and then there was all kinds of alternatives, and you know, low down payment loans, you know, 2% down, whatever. And, you know, so that people could ease into, you know, get into their own home, you know, and people use their home. That's, you know, that's always been, you know, more than a home. It's also the primary investment, you know. So, you know, people have historically used that, you know, at the end of their careers to, you know, partly finance their retirement, maybe somewhere else.
It's always been the big for, the regular people. We're not talking about the billionaires necessarily, but yeah, for just regular working people. But you know,
my proposal for saving primary homes actually extends to any home that's a primary residence. When I first started thinking about it, I was, you know, I was saying, well, it should just be for, you know, average people, but you know, when there was a guy in Colorado, he was a wealthy man, and he went to foreclosure, and you know, they took his mansion or whatever, and the guy left court and went and shot himself. Or he might have shot himself right in court. It's been several years, but I started to think, you know, this is taking your home, losing your home is a traumatic deal for anybody. you know, whether your home is a mansion.
Sure. No, I'm talking about the 1% of the 1%, because I don't care. I mean, they're not about to lose theirs yet anyway.
Right.
Sure. I mean, a lot of people, they have a lot invested in their home. It becomes like their family home or whatever, and it can be very traumatic, definitely, to lose that. And so, well, you know, this is one of the things that Brian and I and several other friends talk about a lot, wanting a guaranteed income for people, which, you know, would assure that they would have some place to live. And because nobody should be living on the streets unless that's their choice,
right,
which it usually isn't, but or living in their cars or something. And sure, it's people who are, you know, given X number of days to get out of their homes, it doesn't come as a surprise to them, truly, because they know they've not been making payments. So, you know, I think that there was a time when people were just practically coerced or just lied to enough to go ahead and get into these homes. You know, somehow they didn't take into consideration that they weren't making enough to make the payments. Somebody fast talked them, and they heard what they wanted to hear, and they got into these. I mean, I've had a couple friends who actually did that. They were so glad when they got out from under, because, you know, it wasn't like they
had their doctor. That was that whole refinancing bubble.
Yeah.
You know? People were sold a bill of goods, and I put the blame more on the lenders, because, you know, they really walked these people in there, and, you know, and they were in a no-lose situation, because if somebody defaults, well, it's going to get foreclosed on, you know, there's that was like their remedy, is this foreclosure thing. But it's caused just such a crisis in the country. Caused a family crisis, community crisis, county crisis, state crisis, and it's a national crisis.
Well, we have now, depending on what article or who you listen to, for every homeless person in this country, there's between 13 and 18. Empty residence.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything in the meantime? Do you have any kind of idea that we could put some of these people in some of these places, or is that just too far out?
Well, you know, there's more to the plan than stopping foreclosures. That I haven't gone into, but, you know, one thing is we have to have a guaranteed loan level, you know, for the bottom rung entry level home for who needs a home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but one thing we can do is, like I said, with these new technologies, you know, we can create whole new communities with that very low cost. You know, if you can build a small home for $5,000, you know, absolutely. We can afford to put people in those.
Yeah. I just think that is, you know, sometimes when science works for the people, isn't it amazing what can happen?
Absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely.
You know, so right now, just before you leave, besides the foreclosures, give me a couple other things that are high on your list of issues as you run for this congressional district first.
The really new thing that I'm really behind is creating a national referendum process, you know, to add another branch of government, which is the people, and to bring some democracy into our national politics, have some sort of a national referendum process.
Okay.
So that the people, irregardless of a Congress that doesn't listen, irregardless of an executive that doesn't listen, the people have a way to change the rules. you know, and still with the checks and balances of, say, you know, the judicial branch, so that, you know, you don't get a tyranny of the many, you know.
Right.
You know, but it's a mechanism for the people to have a say, so that, you know, say this idea that I have, you know, for stopping primary home foreclosures. Well, you know, there's 535 people in Congress that haven't gotten that message yet. But, you know, if people get behind something like that, you know, in a referendum process, well, we could pass it whether they like it or not.
Okay.
You know, in Florida, we've got a medical marijuana bill, on a referendum vote coming up in November also.
Okay.
And, you know, that's the people speaking, you know. So forget the legislators. If they're not going to listen to the people, then give the people a way to enact legislation. So,
okay. I wanted to say that you can be found on Facebook, Mike Trout. Also, you've got the website, which is called VoteForTrout.com.
Yeah.
And also, I know we're in the process of revamping, but you also have another one called Dump. Let me just spell this. DUMPDEUTCH.com. So both of those websites.
Those are my same campaign website, but, you know, I came up with that after the incumbent I'm running against. When I realized that he was not going to give me a debate, I had the idea, well, then we'll put the debate on the street corners.
I will, after the shows, we'll put those on Aramark Theo page also, so people can go there and see more about what's going on with you. And then also, like I said, Mike Trout on Facebook. So, Mike, thanks so much. And I want to wish you tons of luck in November. I hope that your long district remains at least till after the election, so that, you know, and then I don't know how they would work it, but I just hope maybe they just keep it the way it is now. Long and skinny is fine, you know?
It's up in the air, to tell you the truth. They don't really know.
So thanks so much, Mike.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Hello, Siri, Ms. Jacobson. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi. Well, I am great. How about you? I know you've had a rough week, Siri.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was not easy.
Well, I told people at the beginning of the show that one of the topics would be these Israeli children that have been disappeared. And you and I are in complete agreement on that one. Do you just want to, there may be somebody left around who hasn't heard about it, so you want to start at the beginning with them?
Of course. So the settlements of Palestine are illegal under international law and even Israeli high court law. Some of them, most of them, are illegal to build on or to be in. So people really have to understand the background a little bit of the settlements, the politics based on hate that the settlers have towards the Palestinians, and that every day and every night hundreds of Palestinians get attacked by settlers that never gets to any mainstream media, so people do not know. So this time we have three missing settlers. 14-year-old boys from an illegal colony called Gush Etzion. Apparently they were hitchhiking because there is no public transportation in the area. According to Israeli sources, while they were missing, the local police did not report so to IDF for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out why. They did not report it to IDF for 6 hours because that way they can blame a bigger, wide area. and claim in 6 hours he can get away real far, and that way they get to put the, they needed an excuse basically to put the West Bank under siege.
Yeah. You're right. I
unity
is that 6 hour thing, but you're right. That's
unity is what they fear the most, and now that the Palestinians have unity, Israel is not going to be able to handle that. They have been at war with peace activists since 1920s, by the way, so I know they will not. They will create false flags in order to not have peace like they have done in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, and, you know, to them, disappearing three of their own means nothing for because they're using it as an excuse. So.
Of course, they feed their people Monsanto crap. More Israeli children are hungry than American children. They keep Holocaust survivors from getting their paycheck. They kidnap babies from Jewish mothers, too, in the past, just because they were not Ashkenazi.
Yeah, that was really bad. I do want to say that the children in Israel, it's probably not more children hungry percentage-wise, I would agree, than the United States. But since
absolutely.
You know, so many, yeah. But, well, now, the people in the West Bank are, what I want to say, well, we have a friend who was going to leave there yesterday, I believe, to
today,
come to this country.
That's why I'm today. Sad, yes. My friend was supposed to come to America today.
Right.
From Hebron. He's a teenager. He's been waiting for this forever.
Yeah.
And now I'm worried because he already has the ticket, and they're poor. They had to probably borrow money for the ticket, you know, it's...
Oh.
People in the ticket goes to waste, and those are poor people. It's as if there's no heart in military occupation. It's politics based on hate. We need politics based on love and compassion and caring. And we'll have to erase the people who have a lot of fear and think that's impossible. Those people just will need to get help, like mental help. It's not healthy to live your way like that. We need, like I said last time we spoke, mental health in the world is, I believe, part of the problem of the people making wrong choices.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, no, those people, I mean, when we finally get to some kind of agreement, they will have to be helped. Because
they will.
They're in a whole other paradigm. So,
It's proven. You can see it in brain scans nowadays. Maybe they can fix it.
Yeah, amazing. We were talking earlier about science, and I mean,
amazed
at what we can learn.
Hamas has nothing to gain from kidnapping these three boys, but it has everything to lose. And this is from Veterans Today. The only beneficiary here is Israel. And like I said, unity is what they fear the most.
Right. I mean,
also,
Israel is good at doing false flags too, and you know, blaming.
All you have to do is research it.
Sure. Well, just go back to and years of the USS Liberty, when Israel tried to drown a U.S. ship because they were going to blame it on Egypt. And, you know, unfortunately, President Johnson pretty much went along with the plan. But, you know, a false flag means nothing to them except, like you said, a way to, I mean, they thought that it would give them an excuse. So then they started bombing Gaza again and doing more to people, just like our friend who now is shut out of coming to the States for who knows how long.
A false flag is nothing, and when I was growing up, some of the fathers of my friends were in the Mossad, And sometimes I would hear them laugh and talk about stuff they did. I will never forget. Sometimes they would cry, too. Things that are etched in my memory real hard. Realizing that's probably what helped me wake up as a kid. Sometimes they'd break down crying, talking about wars, and sometimes they would talk about, one time he was laughing, saying they dressed up as prostitutes to go kill some Arab leader. And even I was a kid, and thinking he was like a manly man, and thinking of him dressed up as a prostitute, even I laughed. Terrible.
Well, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, you're a kid, and the idea is just bizarre, and you're not thinking about the reason behind it.
We were taught that Arabs are wanting to throw us all into the sea from day one.
Yeah.
As a child, it's really scary to hear that. I was scared.
Sure.
Just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, anytime you think that these people that live just next to you are out to murder you, that's going to be traumatic.
Oh, yeah. Remember the first few times I met Palestinians as a teenager, living an hour from a lot of Palestinian towns? I would meet them sometimes, and they would be really nice people, and I would have this thing, and wait a second, they're really nice.
Yeah. So
then I started venturing out and going to visit Ramallah and Gaza with a bus, you know, the teenager. And I noticed things are really nice and have a great vibe over there. And it's like being in a beautiful place. The Arab building style is so amazing and breathtaking. It's a really beautiful place. They have a beautiful culture.
Well, and then you actually, you spent some time with the Bedouins when you
yes.
were doing your thing. So,
yes. Great people. They striked me as great people. They said very wise words. One of the Bedouin was talking about living in the UK for 7 years, being a taxi driver. And I was blown away because he said he made pretty good money as a taxi driver in the UK, but he missed living like a simple life so much. He said he feels more alive, and I agree. I would love to live where they live.
Right. Well, you're probably friends with Sammy the Bedouin, and he sometimes has pictures or just articles about the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful country.
Oh, yeah. It's breathtaking.
Yeah.
And the Bedouin know how to smoke really good stuff, so it enhances the whole experience. They do.
Plug right there.
In
okay.
moderation, they smoke poppies, and they smoke hash.
Okay.
As if it's legal. Every Bedouin tribe, you see them smoking at night.
Yeah, well, see, that's the campfire thing. One of my most favorite things in the world is to be with nice people around a fire. So, yeah.
They're very good. Pleasant, yes. They do not drink alcohol.
No. Switch up.
Gaza has been under attack every night. That makes me nauseous.
I want to talk about that. Yes, I've been seeing that.
I feel terrible. They're attacking an area called Khan Yunis, which is where my sweet, sweet, lovely teenage friend lives. And I spoke to her on Skype, and now it breaks my heart even more when you know the people from there.
Exactly.
How great they are.
And you know, when you're talking to them or writing with them, and then they say, okay, well, you know, I've got to go because they're cutting off the electricity. And
yeah.
I mean, this is just a fact in Gaza. They run maybe 8 hours, maybe only six. It's frustrating. I mean, we get crazy here if our lights go out, our power goes out for a few hours. And, you know, it's just like, okay, every day there, this is what happens. So, you know, just the simple things we take for granted, like refrigerated food, Well, forget it.
Yes, forget
it. It's not going to happen.
Especially in that heat. Oh, my God, it's so hot there.
And then the hospitals, they have generators, they try, but when the equipment goes out, it's a life or death matter, and a lot of people have died because of this.
A life no one should live.
Oh.
Rachel Corrie's words.
Well, she was definitely
no
right.
One should live. Another thing about the false flag attack, I just remembered there's so many details because I've been going through Israeli sources, which are mad. A lot of Israelis say it's false flag and are mad and are talking about it in the open. And while this happened, they passed in the Knesset some really terrible laws in favor of the big corporations that will really harm the poor. For example, taking away their social security benefits.
You're kidding.
Yeah, they're going to make it into a right-to-work state for many, many places. In construction, they'll make it a right-to-work, like in Tennessee, where they can probably fire you anytime.
Right, right. That's what, yeah.
And we have a great problem with rape culture, which I'm even as concerned as I am for the occupation. I'm very concerned for the Israeli women. We have an Israeli woman in jail. She's still in jail, the lady that was accused of pedophilia because 14-year-old boys raped her.
Right. She's still in jail.
Yes.
I would like for her to have that attorney, I can't think of her name, that Israeli lady who takes a lot of Palestinian cases. I would like for her to take this lady's case.
All the feminist ladies, the big ones, are well aware of this case, and we're all very angered by it because the boys have given a terrible testimony, and it's pure rape in the testimony. She said no. They beat her up, threw something at her, and then did the deed.
And they overpowered her. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. That's pure rape culture, blaming the victim. I was reading that's one of the symptoms.
Yeah. Well, and that goes along with that politician in India. I mean, I don't think I'll ever get over him, who said, well, sometimes rape's right and sometimes it's wrong. It's like, what is he talking about? Sure, when you have such little respect for anyone that you would say something like that. So sure,
politicians are good at raping the masses, so of course they wouldn't think rape is... we have a great campaign going on in Israel to get rapists out of the government. We have in the government people that have been accused of rape by many women.
And they're still in the government?
Yeah.
Sure.
They, of course, are saying the women are lying and it happened a long time ago and blah, blah, blah.
There's also a campaign.
The rape, I guess, one of them happened 20 years ago.
Right. So, okay. Yeah.
It's very, yeah.
Yeah, that's like Gwen in chat's going, sounds like America. Uh-huh.
It does.
Yeah. It's just like...
America's a little better.
But you've got the bucks and you know people. You're pretty much going to get away with it. Once in a while they'll sacrifice one of their own, but not too often. The human panorama just continues to amaze me. But
I worry about all these rapists serving in IDF while they go in the Palestinian homes. I know every home in the West Bank is going to be totally turned upside down. And what scares me is I heard IDF testimony of the soldiers saying that they have stolen money, have stolen things from homes while they raided them. I have many friends in the West Bank. It breaks my heart.
Well, I mean, they're going to take whatever they want. Nobody's going to do anything about it. So, I mean,
nobody.
Once in a great while, somebody from the IDF or the IOF might get their hands wrapped or something for whatever. But as far as, you know, these major things they do, nobody says anything. They just go right ahead.
And I'm sure it's not all the soldiers who are doing bad things, but there's enough of them doing bad things for it to be terrible situation for the Palestinians. Terrible,
well,
I mean, horrific.
It's like, you know, you didn't do anything but yourself put out. But, and I mean, there's other people like you. And, like, you're talking with these people from Breaking the Silence. I mean, wonderful heroes now who are coming forth and saying what they did and how they regret it and how they want all of this to stop. You know, so, no, anybody who says that, oh, I hate it when people start talking about the Jews this, the Jews that. It's like, man, you don't know what you're talking about. That's because I don't like it when somebody says, well, you know, Americans. Like, I had somebody, you know, who said, found out where I was from and said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but I won't be friends with Americans. And I started talking to him, and we're still friends. But he had such a, you know, convoluted idea, and it's just that kind of hatred. It's nourished in countries and cultures, and that's just like you were talking. Some of those little kids, we see those pictures of the Palestinian kids. You know, the old picture. Of the Israeli kids riding on the
missiles.
You know, now those kids, they really, I mean, they believed what they were taught. They're little kids. They're going to believe
what
they were taught. And you know how we're horrified. It's like, well, this is what they're taught, and you can't get all strung out and angry at the children. Because that was just what they were told and taught and told to do.
Especially kids are so innocent. They really believe what they're told.
Sure. Well, because that's it. I mean, they're young. They haven't really experienced the real world, the lies, et cetera, et cetera. Although, like, more and more of them are experiencing the rough part, just like, you know, the children in Israel that go to bed hungry, like children in this country go to bed hungry. I mean, they're experiencing things that no one ever should experience, much less a child.
Economic terrorism, we call it.
That's what it is. Yeah.
It surely is. In Israel, I hear poverty and economic terrorism have reached a point where high school girls start prostitution rings to support their families.
Yeah, that, I mean, anytime that, yeah, somebody does that because they feel they have no choice, then there's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not like some people. I'm fine with legalizing prostitution and on. I think it serves a purpose. I'm not for anyone being coerced into it. And so that's where, you know, I mean, we're talking about these kids who feel they have no other way out, and that is just so wrong.
I'm afraid that the situation is going to get really bad for the Palestinians. I'm afraid there'll be more annexations of land, and many Palestinians will leave because it's too hard to live there this way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, genocide takes all kinds of forms, doesn't it?
Yes.
So, you know, I hope that they do let up on that thing that the West Bank is under right now, though, so that people can do a little bit of traveling. I feel so bad for, and I mean, we know that your friend is not the only person who's going through this, but like you said, it was expensive. The family spent the money for the tickets, and then, I mean, you know, he was okay to go. He was fine to come here and until this happened. So it's just another crackdown kind of thing.
You know, a lot of people in Palestine have never seen the ocean, they tell me. They never left. It's real apartheid if you can't go and see the ocean.
Well, what just tore me up, I don't know, several years ago, talking with somebody in the West Bank who was, they could see the sea, but they had never been able to be there. But from the rooftops, they could see it. But because of, you know, the rules and regulations and the rules that only Israelis can travel on and on and on, these people, and they were not unusual. They could see it but never get to it. And I just thought, how horrible that is. A couple years ago, I don't know if we had talked about it, some Jewish women, sort of in masquerade, they met with some Palestinian women who they helped them come through the checkpoints from the West Bank and took them down to the Mediterranean Sea.
Oh, yeah. There's an organization.
Or to the Sea of Galilee. I'm sorry. I'm not sure. But
they took the law to do that. We put them in our cars, the lefties. We put them in the cars, and when we go through the checkpoint, we say we don't have Palestinians with us, and they look like Israeli women, so they let them pass.
Right,
and we take, my friends take them to the sea. I'm very proud of those women.
And, well, I mean, it was just like a transformative thing. I read what these women wrote, and they were just totally blown away. I mean, to actually get to the sea, but also to have the Israeli women getting them there. So it's not the regular people that are having the issues, not nearly so much as the government, which seems to be the truth everywhere.
In the meanwhile, Palestinian children are being taken away to an Israeli jail called Ofer. In that Israeli jail, they're having their life totally destroyed, the torture, rape.
That's an infamous jail or prison. I mean, it is really one of those that's the pits. It would be sort of like, in this country, in the U.S., they used to talk about being put in a Mexican jail. Like, nobody wanted to get caught, you know, in Tijuana or somewhere. They just didn't want to get in a Mexican jail because they thought, you know, they would be there for months and months, and it'd be a dark, dank, horrible experience. And that's what our kids are going through all the time in the Israeli jails. And we're talking kids. I mean, they've arrested kids. They've arrested kids as young as 5, but they've jailed them as young as 8. So, I can't say anything good about them. I don't know. I mean, I just...
Politics based on hate again. And it's typical of a state that has so much fascist elements, just seen it in history so many times. See it here among the extreme right wing, too.
Yeah. But, Sri, my goodness, our time is up. I went, Sarita is on Facebook, and also you can go to Breaking the Silence. And
oh, yeah. Good. And you'll be blown away by what you hear there. You'll need a handkerchief. It's sad.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it will amaze you. So,
much. Transform anyone who thinks military intervention is a solution for anything.
Really.
It's the reality of war.
And we will, you'll be back with more news next Wednesday then.
Yeah, keep up every day.
Yeah. Okay. See you then. Thanks, honey.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Back and welcome to Feed Your Head. We have Brad Holhut, also known as A-Bear, also known as Pico, and P.E. Nolan with us. Hello, guys.
Hey, what's going on?
And Pico, I'm so used to calling you Pinko, but I know that doing your DJ, you are... DJ Work, you are A-Bear. And then, Trish, I don't know, what do you want to be called?
That's what they call me.
Trish and Pinko or Trish and A-Bear, either way. I generally don't use Brad. Facebook happens to have my real name, and that's fine. But, yeah, I haven't used my real name on anything.
You don't use your real name.
A bank statement in, 30 years.
I do want to say that Trish can be found at www.menopausalstoners.blogspot.com. Yeah. And Pinko at blogtalk or www.blogtalkradio.com/TASH, standing for the Authority Smashing Hour.
Yeah, smash that
authority. Yeah. Well, and tonight, I mean, there's so much that the two of you, I saw someplace where Trish said she loves being part of an artsy activist couple. So you have plenty of things to talk about, but we're going to talk quite a bit about Burning Man today. And I heard about Burning Man about 10 years ago or so when I met a person who said that he went every other year. Because I guess that was whatever, he went every other year. And I had just never heard of it. It sounded fascinating. And now, Pinko, you've been going for years and years and years. Am I right?
Well, yeah, not as long as some people. I think actually it was only 2009. So this will be my this will be my sixth year.
Okay.
I wish I'd been going all the time, but like most people, I was working. It was something I heard about, and maybe I'll get around to it one day. That was the sound of a bong hitting a glass.
Well, that sounds more fun than what you hear from me is the neighbor's dog. So
I heard that.
I know it, and it always sounds like it's right next. Well, it is next door, but it sounds like it's in the next room or my room. But, there's quite a distance between our houses, and I have this second-story flat, and I don't know that the dog just has a good voice.
Ruthann, if you come to Burning Man, everything will sound not only like it's next door, it'll sound like it's in your own tent. It is
because
so...
It is.
The cacophony of noise out there, the constant 24-hour... The amount of sound and noise is unbelievable.
That's what I love about festivals, although they're not noisy like that, but I do love going to sleep listening to the drums.
Right.
There's something about that is just marvelous. But I did look up Burning Man. It started in 1986, and it was free, and there were about 30 people that went.
Yeah,
In 2013, it cost $380, and there were 68,000 people.
That's right. And it's funny, people that hear about the ticket price, you know, that it's, you know, $380, and now you have to have a $40 vehicle pass for, you know, if you bring a vehicle in, and that money, you know, supposedly is going to go towards helping the road maintenance and such, but we'll see. But people that say, oh, my God, that's $400, really? Well, that's just a drop in the bucket when you really get into it and start going. That's just the price of showing up. There's so much more involved. But Trish has a take on the cost of this vacation versus what? Going
Disney World. It doesn't cost any more than going to Disney World, and if you've done this American thing when you have kids of hauling your ass down to Florida and running around the rat hole is what my family called it, because Mickey Mouse is stamped on everything, and it's you know, by the time you pay the airfare and the tickets and the food and the this and the that, it's expensive to go to Disneyland. It's expensive to go to Burning Man, but it doesn't, I mean, and just like Disney World, you can stay in a cheap hotel or you can stay in a pricey one and go on a budget or whatever. But where Disney World is all about branding and commercialism and marketing and money.
Spectatorism.
Yes, spectatorism. Burning Man is participatory. Commodification is one of the 10 principles. And last year was my first burn, and as I was making the decision about whether to go or not, I did my research because, you know, I researched it. And
that's what you do?
That's what I do. I, if somebody says, well, what about whatever, I look at a book first.
So besides, you were also researching Pinko. Because
well, yeah, I did actually research. That is true. I looked at his Facebook photos and everything before I was like, yeah, well, because really, I mean, to tell you the truth, because I think my mother is not listening, and that is that, you know, I had never met him before, but we had met online through Facebook groups, through Facebook groups only.
Yeah, and because of Occupy.
Because of Occupy, and then other political stuff, and I paid attention to what he did and liked the way he sounded. And I live in New York City, and most of the men I had been dating were like, it was like dating resumes, and I don't want to say like I just dated fucking assholes, but I mean, the thing is, like,
but there's a lot of assholes in New York
really
City
are,
with real estate.
They're really between real estate and bankers and corporations and bankers, and then there's more bankers, and then there's stockbrokers and a hedge fund manager.
And a marketing man.
And I was like, fuck this bullshit. I'm not going out with you guys. I'm just not. I wouldn't even, you know, and they ask me about this Starbucks, and I'm like, please, Starbucks. And so I had, and so anyhow, I started getting a crush on him when he had posted something about his dog who he loved had died, and he put a song on, and then he seemed suddenly more human to me than just somebody who talks about politics.
Some mouthy red.
Yes, another mouthy red. Yeah. Pinko is another Mally Red, but you were always articulate. Anyway, he said, well, why don't you come to Burning Man? And I was feeling old and blah-de-blah. Anyway, I just thought, why not? And part of that process was looking over his Facebook page and deciding if I would fuck him or not, because when a man has invited you to go across the country, and like Burning Man can be really rugged, you know, and it's nice that he has this air-conditioned RV with its own toilets, right with what would be considered like beachfront property. So there's a view of the man, like right from the front yard. And so, yeah, when people hear about Burning Man, about, oh, what are you going to do? It's dusty, it's hot, there's, you know, there's outhouses, you've got to be kidding me, I'm never going to do that. And I must admit, I'm more of an indoor plumbing kind of gal.
Yeah.
And so, but I have an air conditioner and all of this. And so, yeah, I looked at your face because you're not going to go out there and do that. When at least you got to at least remotely consider fucking this person.
Yeah.
And so that was really, but he didn't realize that was on the table.
No,
he didn't understand that at all.
I did not know that that was on the agenda. I already had my fire wife for the year already arranged from the previous year.
I know.
And so, yeah, it started coming together in my head. And then I think I asked someone who may be in the chat room, what's up with this? Is this a thing about Burning Man or a thing about me? And she just said, well, I don't know anything about that. And I was like, oh, of course you do. So anyway, it all worked out well. Enough about our personals. I mean, you know, I'm fine with it. But we had our first date on the playa for 7 days. And then we had our second date in New York when I came
to
visit.
And I'm like, oh, my God, this is, like, so much better than Starbucks, you know?
So much better than Starbucks.
Like, for real. And when
Romancing the Stone.
But we were actually watching the end of Romancing the Stone last night. And there's a part where Kathleen Turner looks at what's his name and says that.
What's his name?
He's just whatever, man. And but anyhow, she says, you're my best time. And for weeks afterwards, I was like, oh my God, this was the best time. He was my best time ever. I had never done Molly before, and you know, and I'm minding my own business. I'm an old woman, and
well, that was the funny thing. I didn't even think she was going to come because I thought, really, like, what, 54-year-old school teacher's going to like come out to the desert and rough it out here? I'm like, she ain't coming, and so I didn't hold her hand when I was talking to her before the time. I was like, no, look, you. Go, and I would say this to anybody who's thinking about coming, go to theburningman.com. Read everything there. I mean everything. And really get it that when on the back of your ticket, there's a warning that says, you know, warning, you might die at this event. Yeah, it's real. So you have to be prepared. And I didn't want to be like holding your hand and like being the, like wasting my good time and my vacation. You know, because she was a little pansy and couldn't handle it. And so, you know, so I was like serious about this. But she, like she said, she's a teacher that digs in, digs into stuff, and she really got it. And she was a champion out there. I was flabbergasted. We got along. Well, I wasn't surprised we got along so well. I was surprised how well she handled the harsh conditions, because it can be, you know, it can be 40 degrees at night, but it can be 115 during the day.
But, well, no, we were asleep. We didn't get out of bed for a lot of the time in the day.
Well, that's my feeling. Some people are they love the morning sunrise, and they love to, you know, do things in the morning and get out and explore and look at the art, see their neighbors, you know, campers that they've seen in past years and go visit. My thing is to do that at night. I like to be up all night and then watch the sun come up in the morning on my way home or just after I got home.
Really,
and
great.
Then sleep from like 9 o'clock till 3 p.m.
Because really, why go out when it's 115?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a logical, rational thing to do, because the more, I mean, anybody who has any sense knows that nothing fun happens up until the sun goes down.
I like the nighttime and I like the morning time. Afternoons are not my time. So
afternoon delight is cool.
You know, well, that's,
well,
the
that's something else.
Bed.
Yeah.
That is the best.
Sky rockets and flight, man.
Oh, hush.
Afternoon delight.
I'm just like, what cross are you just starting? Oh,
yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. So, yeah, enough about us. I mean, that's the story, and it's really sweet. And it's all mushy. But, yeah.
Right, and so now you're a New Yorker. You've left Reno, and you're, yes.
So I had to import a man, because there wasn't, if you are, I guess he would consider me artsy, and if you're like really red in your politics and I think it's hard after a certain age when you're not getting, when certain things are, there are no compromise. And so many people say they're middle of the road when you're dating because they're even afraid to talk about it. And I'm like, the times that we are in right now, that is such bullshit to be middle of the road. And you need to know which side are you on and where are you going to stand. And I can tell, I can tell from across the country that this was that kind of man and this was that kind of place. And I love the immediacy part. They've got the 10 principles.
Yeah, why don't we back up? Tell her a little bit about the 10 principles.
The 10 principles, to me, you can look at them, but it's the guiding philosophy of the whole event. And if you wanted to find out why Burning Man, of all the places you could go, and so, but they stay who they are in their philosophy and their principles. And I don't know why Larry did that. We saw him talk at Columbia in some comparative religion event, which was really cool, but I forget what he said. But it was, anyhow, the principles are up there on the website because, of course, they have one. And I found like that was philosophically something I could commit to immediacy because I've always been an existentialist. And if you look at things like near-term extinction or just out, if you just look out the fucking window where you are, then you know we could die any minute now. So how do you want to spend your time? And
Do you want to go to Disney World?
Do you want to play Angry Birds?
Yeah, or do you want to go to Burning Man? Do you want to sit
dance in the desert?
Yeah, sit on a beach and have, you know, wage slaves bring you, you know, pretty cocktails and just be part of that bourgeois bullshit?
Make some art.
Or do you want to make some art or hang out with people that make art?
Yeah, that was like today they have not even put up a fence. There was nothing. But in 2 months we will be 68,000 of us burning the fucking man. It's really fun. And then he's gone. And then 6 weeks later it's as if we were never been. And the BLM blessed him. Yeah, DPW, what he works for sometimes. And Bureau of Land Management has to certify that we left no trace. So as we came, we went, it's like being in Brigadoon, and it just disappears in the dust.
Yeah, and people make a mistake all the time, like, oh, Burning Man, that's just that's a festival, like the Rainbow Gathering or the, you know, EDC or, you know, and I would just caution anybody who thinks, oh, it's just like Woodstock or whatever. No, it's a very different experience.
Right.
And it has it's not homogenous in that if you go to, you know, some of these festivals, you see, you know, pretty much the same demographic out there. We've got, it's 70,000 people and we've got a bell curve that's just like any other except for with race. And
yeah, it's fucking white. Wider than
but we have a bell curve that it looks completely normal, like young people, old people, a lot of people in the middle, incomes, you know, dirt dick broke to multimillionaire, and the, you know, with most people in the middle. So one of the first principle is radical inclusion. And, you know, anybody can be part of Burning Man, right? So anybody can come. There aren't any prerequisites for participation in at Burning Man or at the community. Just, you know, and it's open to everyone, and everyone feels that when they're there.
As soon as you get there, it may be troublesome to get there, but the minute you go, the minute you're in, you can feel the difference. It's like, well, they say that. I think that's kind of sappy, really, the whole welcome home thing, but I get it. You get there and there's no money exchanged. There's only gifting. It's so everybody sets up their place. And he had been with the bar for a long time. This year we're with Sideshow, and there's a guy named Doc Easton doing midnight shows 3 times a week. He just won some award for being a great magician just last weekend. Anyway, he's in our camp this year, and Killbuck makes the art. And so there's all these artists. And the thing is, like any good existentialist, anybody who's been reading Kurt Vonnegut and understands just the way of the nature of the reality that comes at you over the TV versus how it really is, and again, back to you could die any fucking minute, you might as well have your art now, and it's all about now. And so to see the effort that goes into creating the art, and some of it goes off and is in parks around the country and the world, but the a lot of it is built to be burned, so you can just really live in the moment. And one of the things I think grown-ups struggle really hard to do,
yes.
I say that as a preschool teacher, because I hang out with 2- and 4-year-olds, and so one thing we know about is the moment, and the moment is all you have.
Yes.
And when you make a choice, like, okay, so what are you going to do with this moment? And people can say that it's just like a hedonistic vacation and you goofy hippies are taking drugs and dancing around the flames. And, you know, maybe we are. But while we're there, there is a spirit of camaraderie. It's a duocracy. It's not like somebody made this road or, like he says, wage slaves are bringing it. No, they built a fucking road and they're self-organized and it's an example of anarchy in action. And by that I mean an anarchic societal structure, not chaos, like the ruling class would have us believe that word means, which the word anarchy doesn't even mean what people think it means. It means a self-organizing, functional community that solves its problems from within. And we can take care of ourselves. We don't need the law imposed on us. We can handle ourselves. People think we can't handle ourselves. That's because we're trying to boss us the fuck around. And so they say, you are to this, whatever you can do. And we deal. And like I say, 68,000 come, and 2 months later, they were never there. So that means we can handle our shit, motherfucker. And that's in self-governance as well. And so you have that example of coming and joining and being part of something where people self-organize and treat each other right. And it's not to say that things don't happen there. Shit happens. And the rape thing is big. And even though they talk about consent, we live in a society that still doesn't even know what consent really is. And they give you a handbook with your ticket. You get the handout about no means no and try and say, you know, because like in real life, it's not whatever women have to do to prevent themselves from getting raped. It's like, well, maybe men don't need to rape people and you should tell them that. And so they have the handbook that they put under their hand because we know a lot of people need to hear it more than once. Anyway, I'm losing my train of thought. But that's one of the problems that we have to face and deal with. And Occupy actually had to deal with that, too. We went through that at Zuccotti Park about how to handle the rape. So
let me
ask you. Is there some type of like the, you know, Occupy had general assemblies. Is there something, and different festivals I've gone to have a meeting every day anybody can go to, sort of just a town hall thing to raise issues. Do you have something like that at Burning Man?
Not that I'm aware of. This place is, you know, radical self-reliance, radical self-expression.
Yeah.
You know, civic responsibility, you look at the 10 principles, I think we have much less, many fewer issues than other communities. And this is this is a vacation. Don't forget, it's a vacation. You know, do you really want to have a meeting in the morning and with other people?
Well, some people do. Like the Rangers probably do that.
So let me explain that. So if there's an issue in the city that doesn't involve or hasn't involved the law enforcement. We call them LEOs, law enforcement organizations. So the BLM or the feds or the DEA or whatever. If there's an issue, you know, people talk it out amongst themselves in at first, and then they'll grab what they call a ranger. They're part of. They're not cops. They're burners. They're there to have a great time, but they're kind of the first line before something gets called to the attention of the LEOs. And they're really, really helpful. And but as far as a morning meeting, you know, it's a 24-hour town, and maybe there is a place for that somewhere. But
I don't know. I mean, if there is, then somebody will stand there and make it, because there's a thing.
Well, that's true.
If you want a place to voice your opinion, fucking start talking, bitch. And he hates it when I say that. I'm sorry. I'm a New Yorker sometimes.
Bitch. I hate that.
But
anyway.
Let me ask you some practical questions then.
Sure.
Now, it is north of Reno, right?
Yeah.
And it is in the Black Rock Desert. And so the easiest for people coming in, if they're not driving, well, you have to have some kind of transportation there, though. Bicycles are big, I hear.
Yeah, well, look. We shouldn't spend time on directions on how to get there, right?
But I will say that you just jump on the bus from San Francisco. They drop you off at the inside the gate. It wouldn't be more
there. There are message boards, ePlaya, there's a wealth of information online for people to find out all the details. So, but,
so my question was going to be, though, like, Reno would be the closest place that you're flying in.
Yeah, and that's actually where I moved from. And so,
right.
And there's a huge burner community there, and
at the Morris Hotel.
There's a huge burner community, and really cool things happening at the Morris and over at this place called the Generator. People can search and Google that stuff, but it's not just that week's vacation. It really can be, and it is for a lot of people, a year-round community, year-round friends, year-round, you know, second family.
It seems to be a lifestyle. Because you guys are meeting people in New York for monthly meetings and maybe oftener. I guess weekly. Anyway, I mean, burning people. So
it's
a life. It's a different.
The burning man community is all over the world now. South Africa has a South Africa burn. There's, you know, France. We got burns going on. Denmark, Sweden, Spain.
And then there are regional burns as well.
Yeah, there's regional burns here, in the off season, in Texas, up in Michigan,
And there was one upstate.
So there are people who go out there who just like come for the weekend, take a bunch of drugs and dance to, you know, whatever DJ's on the super big sound stage with the cool laser show. And yes, that's fun. But maybe one fifth of the place or something. It's not even, it's cool, but, and I'm a DJ for God's sake. I'm saying it's cool, but it's only a small piece of it. And there was a long period of time, many years, where Burning Man didn't have the electronic music dance stages. So that is something that's come on lately.
It's fun and it's cool.
But I don't think it gets to the heart of what
the whole experience is about. All right, but see, here's what I found brilliant is, so what they do is they take the principals, they build this center camp, which is like a coffee house. The only place that buys and sells that has got real money being tossed about, and
for
you can
buy
coffee
and
there.
Ice.
So, you know, when I got there, and the little girl from last year was instantly dispensed with, and she did it on herself, and so that was a fine part of the drama. But the point is, you got sick, and so I got up and went to Central Camp because I was like, didn't really know anybody in the desert. There was this literally romantic drama from last year hanging on that did add a bit of interest to myself, and it was all good. But I didn't really know what to do with myself when I woke up in the morning, but I did know how to get dressed and walk down to get coffee, so that's what.
Because that's what New Yorkers do. They go get coffee.
So it was only a few blocks away. I wanted to get coffee. I met this really cute, ripped guy who was only a few years younger than me, and he could see me walking up, and he spread his arms wide and said, "Oh, share some of that energy." And we just talked for a little while, and then he was hitting on me, and I was like, what, it was fun. I have to say, it was fun. It was cute. I was like, I felt attractive and appreciated.
Yeah.
And sexy, which is nice when you're an old woman like me. And I felt like I wasn't so old at all. And anyway, he got like a Woody, and I was walking away, and he goes, "You're going to leave me like this?" I said, "I heard that in eighth grade," and kept walking, and it was really fun. And then I hung out, and when so I get there, and they have it set up almost like a museum, or as if you walked into a museum, where it's like, if you're a teacher, I'm noticing the 10 principles are laid out on these billboards around the room. So even if you just came in to have drugs and party and whatever, you know,
you're
still going to get the 10 principles. And so it's like this way of how to behave has sort of missed out on, I mean, it's been left out of the curriculum, it's been left out of society, and so we have lots and lots and lots of stupid entitled people, and maybe they're coming just for a party, but once they get there, they're not going to leave that way, and they're going to be introduced to things like Leave No Trace. They're going to be introduced to things like civic responsibility. It's, you know, participate. Your experiences, you're in charge of your own experience, not Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
You know, we're not here to be entertained. It's not TV. You're going to participate, or you can sit there anyhow. And then there's no money. So I think it's cool that, and the art is immediate, and it's all there. And so I think it's cool the way that they put the curriculum in into the kids so that they'll have that part and they'll leave, and maybe they'll be in the next thing that's like Occupy. Maybe they'll start working for a living wage. Maybe they'll start working for the environment because they've been exposed to that in a way that's intense really quickly. Because if the world is changing around you, we'll jump inside a Mad Max movie and get a bunch of dust in your mouth and understand that's the direction we're going with climate change. You know, you want to get a taste of this? Well, come on, because guess what? It's on its fucking way if you've looked at the weather report lately. And it is not, we're not anticipating climate change. It has changed, and here we are. And so,
well, let me just say on that, if any shit, really bad shit goes down and like, our civilization, like, seriously falls apart rather quickly, I will be looking to hang out and live with the people who, like, go to Burning Man and or the people who work setting up the city in the Department of Public Works. These are not only artist types, but these are some handy motherfuckers, too.
Yeah, really amazing tinkering going on with the technology. I mean, when you think about things like, okay, well, what if the NSA shuts off the Internet or whatever? Well, if that happens, you want people to go wire you up quick, and you will have
That's the amazing thing is the type of people that go, the ones that go year after year. I'd like to be with them in the apocalypse. We already have the Thunderdome.
I know they did that, but that's why I wanted to be with
them. There's a group that does an actual Thunderdome. And, you know, two men enter, one man leave, and they have the big straps, and the weapons are on these big Nerf bats. But the crowd climbs up on the dome, and they have these matches with the ringmaster, just like from the movie.
I know.
And it's out in the middle of the fucking desert, right?
I would just recommend to anyone, Google or DuckDuck or whoever you use, and check out the pictures of these structures. They are amazing. And there must be so many generators. I mean, they all have to. I mean, that's why that would be a lot of the noise, I think.
So there are generators, and there are areas that where it's no noise, no amplified music, and no generators. There's all these different areas. But yeah, I mean, like in my particular camp, we're part of several camps in one village, and we have a no generator policy. You know, I've got one on my RV, but I can't use it. But the deal is, we're renting these massive, huge, commercial generators, and we got a grid that we lay out a few days beforehand, so everybody can hook up.
Pinkle, aren't you going really to help? Build?
Yeah, you know what? It's up in the air. It doesn't look like it, though. You never know. Here's the deal. The group that I was with last year in the dispatch office, they didn't have room for me this year. So things change out there. And so I've been looking for another department because there's the fuel depot, there's the airport, there's the regular depot, there's the sign shop, there's the
ice shop. That's the other thing.
Arctica. I mean, there's the free bicycles, a yellow bike program. These are, free community bikes.
I didn't know. I thought people had to bring their own bikes.
No, they do. They do. But, you bring out, 800 or 1,000 bikes, and you have a crew volunteering so people, if they need a bike, they can use it. But most people should bring their own bikes. It's just because there's not enough. There's not enough bikes for everybody.
Right.
But anyway, what I'm saying is there's a million different crews on DPW. To make everything work, there's heavy equipment and transportation. There's all this stuff. The shade crew that builds the shade before the work crew show up to do the work. It's the crafting work. So I may get a place with them this year. I may not. But at any rate, we're going early this year to help set up our own village.
Transportation, and that's another thing is people make these art cars that are public transportation, and all you have to do is jump on. It's a 5-mile-an-hour
experience.
That's what it is. You need a ride, there goes one.
One of the great things about that though is you get on an art car that's going out or going across the desert, You don't know where they're going.
I don't
even know if they know where they're going.
No, and they change their mind.
But what will happen is you know you're going to have a good time. So you might be all tired and shit. We've been gone for 9 hours, 12 hours in our feet. Well, we're gonna let's get back home and rest. But that's a cool thing. You don't have to go back home because you can find somebody friendly and just crash on an art piece. But
people do that.
But I forgot what my train of thought was because that's what happens. But oh yeah, so the art cause it's a huge part. And every year there's more and more, more interesting, more strange, more unusual. And it's mobile art that people can use, immediately. You don't have to give them any fare to get on. It's all, demodified.
They modified the hell out of this.
Anyway, so that's cool. one of those things,
I'm really impressed that you can't buy things, that everything is, just gifted.
Yeah, and no internet either. How's that? Oh, my God.
But
no telephone.
Yeah.
That's really good for a lot of us. For a week away, that's great.
Yeah, and really, your smile is a gift. It's not like you have to walk around with a bunch of Mardi Gras beads.
No, it's nothing like that.
No. About the water? Now, I know you had an RV, but how much water did you plan on bringing?
It's The handbook will say five gallons a day per person. So if you're going to be there for a week, bring 5 gallons, or because they probably recommend more than you need. But if you're going to be there for 5 days, bring 5 gallons. But it don't come with nothing, and don't come with just an empty cup, or worse, without a cup. I mean, you're not going to die. Somebody will give you water.
Radical self-reliance doesn't mean you have to depend on the kindness of strangers. You're not going to do that. What it is, we're here to help each other, and we're going to give you water if you want it around our campfire, absolutely. And
might even give you booze.
You just never know what's there, but we'll have that. But we're also not there to carry people's ass either. There are balances of the way.
Let me say this. Hippie is a bad word out there to most of the people. Now, I like hippie. I identify with hippies. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but it has a different connotation out there. Because again, this isn't Woodstock, and it isn't
the rainbow
gathering. It's a different thing,
right?
This
is, you're talking real art. I mean, these structures are amazing.
They're amazing.
They're huge and colorful and out of this world, and also very much of this world. I mean, there's just such a variety.
Yeah, let me just give my favorite. Things burn every year, and every year it's cool. But 2-3 years ago, we heard about some camp that was building a 60-foot-high Trojan horse, complete with the big wheels on the base, right? And I'm like, yeah, sure, they are. Maybe it was 3 years ago. Well, I get there, 2-3 days before it starts, with an early entry pass, and we're putting our camp together, a couple of us that came early. And I look, and there's this fucking horse in the middle of the desert. He's 60 feet high. And he's on these big wheels. And now, so then during the week, you go by it, and they're still building it and, getting it together. And then we find out that it's going to be hauled out. They have these big ropes, slave ropes. And at, a certain time, 3 o'clock, meet at the horse and drag this horse out a half mile into the desert. So at nighttime we can all gather around it, and then somebody with a flaming arrow in the darkness shoots, 100 yards into the air, hits the horse, and there's gunpowder and oil and shit, inside the horse, and it boom starts catching fire and explosions, and then it burns for 2 hours. Are you fucking kidding me? You don't need any drugs.
No, yeah.
Well, and then when the fire goes, the whirlwind picks up the dust, and it makes...
Dust devils.
Well, the whirlwind, the ancestors.
Don't call them the dust devils.
Well, unless you're from Oklahoma and you see what they do to their land in Oklahoma, but that's, anyhow, there's another point. those things are really cool, and they sail around, and last year it sort of turned out thematically, they burned up a lot of churches and cathedrals.
Yeah, that was a new one on me. I've been going for 5 years, and I've never seen any, much or any church-type stuff. There were, three or four art pieces.
And they burned them all.
With church themes, and one was called The Church Trap. It's like this old little house on the prairie, looking wooden church, right, out in the desert. But you know how a mouse trap, you lift up the top, and there's a stick that keeps it from, and the cheese is inside? So this was the church trap. I guess, she was raised by really strict religious parents who couldn't agree on which religion, and she'd had enough. And so there were pews, in the church, and the top of the church was propped up by a stick. And there was an organ, and the organ worked. And so just random burners, random people out there would walk over to it and check it out, and then somebody would decide to give a sermon. Or somebody would get on the organ and start playing, playing opera or, some Chopin or something. It's just...
Did they ever trap the people inside?
No.
Oh, okay. I didn't know the trap went down.
No.
I didn't know they burned it.
No.
That was something I meant to go get and didn't, because we wound up at this other party. Anyway, it was cool, and it's very go with the flow. And,
So when are you coming?
Well, not this year, I'll tell you. But actually, you were saying about the price. This is very true. It's actually, I would think, cheaper than I have relatives. I've never been to Disney World, but as many times as I've been to Florida. But I have relatives who have, and it is not inexpensive.
Like
you were talking, it's so commercialized, and there's not, where you are, and I'm sure because you have a cross section of people there, so you're going to have whatever, but you're going to have people who really are good for helping stimulate your mind, and
absolutely
that's important.
That's what art does.
What was your favorite? Do you have what was your favorite part last year?
Besides staying in bed a lot,
I really enjoyed. I'll say again. I mean, I'm an existentialist if I'm anything, and so the way that the people came from nowhere, built this whole thing, and then left no trace, and celebrated the immediacy was striking to me. Just the whole. Feel of being there, I guess you could say it's a homogenous group because it's the homogenous group of people who think it's a cool idea to go out in the middle of the desert and then hang out and do art and dance and do yoga. Some people are doing it or anything, but with everything going on, it's a time to build community and reach out and grab somebody's hand and really celebrate life, because there was just so much, that's so alarming. But I guess the point is, people may be people across the world, but the earth is still there, and there's still many of good things that happen every day, and you'll be right in the middle of one of them, and it's cool.
Yeah, I can't think of any place I'd rather be on the planet for that particular week. There's just nothing. It's all because of all the things we said, but it's the little weird things too. Like we had been out dancing and got home, I don't know, 5 a.m. and we're sitting in this ring of fire that our campmates had brought. It's 40 feet in diameter, and it's got propane running through it, and the flames are 4 inches off the ground in a big 40-foot flame. So in the middle of the night, people are like, oh, we were going home, but hey, let's sit in the middle of the ring of fire and just chill here, right?
It's so cool. We didn't have to, and they threw fire in the air. I don't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, but the cool thing is, so we're just sitting there at the end of this long night, into the early morning, And this dude comes over and he asks for a cigarette. And, you know, I get it. Not everybody always has a cigarette, and they run out. The girl said something like,
tell us a joke.
Tell us a joke. And he said,
What about a story?
I said, tell us a joke. That's right. And he said, what about a story? And I'm like, okay, tell us a story.
But she said, make it under 5 minutes. And he went over. But it turned out he was L. Ron Hubbard's grandson.
Great grandson.
And so he's been a slam poet. I don't know how many times he's told this tale, but he got another opportunity.
Jamie DeWolf.
In the Ring of Fire that night. And, oh, my God, it was like, well, and also Max and Sue created this sacred space for us all right there, and we could always find our way home. Because no matter where we were, we could just look out, and there was the fire burning. And everybody would come, and people would sleep there. So it was sacred space. It wasn't just our front yard. Although there was another little guy there, and he was dripping and had a megaphone saying, get off of my lawn! Get off of my lawn!
That was a different night.
That was funny.
That was early in the evening. But this guy, I mean, who knew? You know, he tells this great story about how he's L. Ron Hubbard's great-great-grandson, and it's the most amazing delivery. And I'm just, like, blown away by this guy.
Yeah.
Well, then about 9 months later, I'm looking at YouTube, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's the dude from the Ring of Circle. And he's doing the Ring of Fire. And he's
the Fire Circle.
On his spoken poetry, he had some recording in some club. He had given that same exact story, that bit. And it was like, then I come to find out he was our campmate at Illumination Village. But we know we had 300 people in the village, and we didn't meet everybody.
And we didn't even know he was our neighbor. Well, I'm glad he stopped by. This year we have some turnstiles, and when you go through the turnstile, the flame will shoot out like.
It's kind of weird
because really you're out in your party and you're having fun, but every now and then you feel the heat and the psh behind you, and it's like, oh, holy crap, I hope I didn't just catch fire. And you're like, no, I've survived another minute. Let's go.
I thought you were going to have a heart attack at first.
I did.
And there's always, when an art car or anything shoots propane, you know, the poofers we call them, it can make a loud noise and scare the fuck out of you. But you don't have
fireworks, right? You can't have, firecrackers.
You can't.
No.
You can't have fireworks in the city as a camper. You can't, blow up fireworks because you'll start a fire and kill a lot of people. So that's the rule. But there are major fireworks displays on a couple of the different art pieces that burn the big ones. The man burns on Saturday. And there's fireworks, and there's always a Friday burn, and the wind thing. So there's fireworks, but they're done specifically by licensed crews.
Same as the people throwing fire batons. They have to have certified whatever.
Spinning point.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, so it's not like a desert free-for-all anymore ever since they took away the drive-by shooting range.
Yeah.
Because really, before there got to be the Borg, I don't know what happened. Somebody got run over in the
area. Like 7 people got killed one year. You know, car driving across the desert with its no lights on, crashed right into a group of campers. But this was before, that was like 1997. But this was before it got to be more than a few thousand, you know, it wasn't 20,000 people. It wasn't 8,000 people. It wasn't that big. And it was not organized. And it wasn't making money, you know, for the organizers. It was just people being out there. But some people did stupid shit and things. Though I do like to look at the YouTube video of the automatic machine guns shooting Barney the dinosaur hanging out of a moving car, the drive-by shooting range. I wish I was there, but yeah, there has to be some rules because otherwise people die in large numbers.
But at least these are rules that people got together and talked about over time in a way that is a lot like General Assembly. These are rules the community came up together. And that's the rules the community has agreed to live by, and they've also agreed to, you know, like, this is just how it works. And it's not some lobbyist with an agenda buying a law like it is in our country today.
Yeah, one of the things a lot of people don't know is since it belongs or it's possessed by the Bureau of Land Management, so So it's, you know, basically what, national park?
It is a national park.
So the rules that apply in your house in Boston or Texas or wherever, you're living here in what we call the default world. Any rule that applies here applies out there. So a big misconception people have is that it's some kind of free-for-all where you can do anything, get away with anything. Well, that's just not true.
Right.
You know,
and wear your condoms. You can't get away.
Yeah,
you can't
so...
And sunscreen, like Kurt Vonnegut would
say.
So
the Burning Man organization, I say we, because, you know, with our ticket prices, we're having to pay. But the money goes to, did I just do a high loop?
Yeah, maybe you got stuck in the high loop.
Oh, wow.
A bond,
right? So, I don't know, it was like $3 million that has to be put up to the state. So the event is held. And people are pretty good about picking up their stuff, but not everybody does, right? But it's a really good. And then there's a volunteer and paid crew, restoration crew for DPW.
Okay, I was going to ask.
Yeah, they take off.
I mean, somebody stays. Okay.
About 2 weeks to clean it up, I think.
Yeah, it's.
It's a great, if you look at videos,
you should find
the resto crew, amazing.
Yeah.
Because they get even like the smallest little quarter-inch piece of paper that is...
Oh, eighth-inch. I mean, it's amazing what the work they do.
And people bring little containers to put their cigarette butts in if they're smokers, because it's like totally uncool to just drop your...
Right, or to pee on the fly. I pee in a cup.
You made me carry that apple jug, that bit of jug of apple jug.
No, when we go out at night, in my pockets, I always have a Gatorade jug. And the cold, fresh Gatorade is on the left, and then the warm, not Gatorade is on my right.
That's what I was going to ask. What about ice? Or what about cold?
Go ahead. So you can buy ice every day at one of three locations. And the line is a couple, fucking miles long. You can do that. Or you can have a generator, electricity, in your camper. Or you can use dry ice, pack three or four or two or three coolers, and dry ice one of them, frozen, and eat out of the other one, and just switch your food.
People have all sorts of creative ways to handle it, and because these are inventive, tinkering sort of people.
Swamp coolers for $5.
Swamp coolers, I feel like we're in the retirement camp because of the way we sort of circle these little RVs, and it's not... so cute as some little RV.
Far from the retirement camp.
Oh my God. So,
know what goes on at the Unicorn Ranch?
Yeah, no. I don't know what goes on anymore, but...
Polysex Superstar
Road. Polly.
Our
mayor is really sex positive, and that was another thing I was impressed with out there, is the environment of consent and what you will consent to and what you're into and what you want to do maybe versus what somebody else wants to do this way and that. And so it's a really sex positive culture as well, and I had never heard about that. So there's a big polyamorous community out there.
Orgy Dome.
Yeah, I didn't do any of that.
Orgy Dome or Costco Soulmate Exchange.
Costco?
Yeah, it's a Costco. It looks like a Costco, and you go with a soulmate, and you trade it for another one. But you can't come without a soulmate. Costco Soulmate Exchange.
Mm-hmm. What about, is there an age limit?
No.
I mean,
kids have been made out there. And kids have come as newborns?
That's something I would really check into as a parent, because it does get dusty. And
they do, but they're what? On the census, they show it's like 0.001. They have all the ages broken down. So.
Well, let me just say, as a parent, you can count on being as judged at Burning Man as you are walking down the street or anywhere else, because people are like uber judgmental about parents
and what children
they do with their kids. And but they come. There are old people there as well. There have been people in wheelchairs.
One of our campmates, 72?
Yeah. So.
And then the youngest one last year was, 21?
I don't know.
24?
I don't know. You know, and there are 16-year-olds out there. There are little kids that go to Kidsville. I like kids myself, but I wouldn't bring mine. I told him if he'll ever graduate from college, though, he can come out. I'll give him his graduation party at Burning Man. So we'll see if he ever graduates. And he seems jazzed by the idea, but I didn't want him to cramp my style last year or this year. And our campmate Sam or her daughter Duchess is coming this year.
Right.
So, and then Doc Easton's son is another magician. So we do have actually multi-generational in a couple of ways. Because mm-hmm. George comes and he's somebody else's dad. So, I mean, we really are like a family vacation. It's just as family-oriented.
But it's a family,
I would say,
it's a family you like.
Yeah, it's a family you like. And so if you could, yeah, in America, what are your choices to go on vacation? We can all talk about free will, and we can make a decision in our head about what we want to do. But once you do that, you have certain restrictions over maybe you've only got this amount of money to spend on vacation or can only go so far. And I would recommend Burning Man as an option because I considered it in that way. You know, I knew what it was going to cost me. Would I rather go to a nice weekend at a spa and get a massage and this and that? And I would, you know, if I hit Lotto, you know, I'd maybe do that. But this time I would go out. I figure what's the worst thing that could happen? If he was going to be with that girl from last year, then I would just, think he was an asshole, and I can always just fly out. There's an airplane right there. My cousin was in Tahoe. How bad can it be? Or maybe I would find somebody else.
That guru.
She has
the block chakra.
Silly thing. Anyhow,
come on, you have
we
to
only
tell.
Have 5 minutes.
Tell the guru, Doc.
Look, it's just, well, he really was saying that, oh, he was like, I don't know. Osho, you know the one up in Oregon, and it's all about sex. And the punchline is that we were talking about clearing my throat chakra so I could, like, find my voice. He said the best thing for that was to, he was very polite about it, but he punched it with, suck my dick, it will clear your throat chakra. And how he has clients, and they just did that. I'm like, you know what? Maybe you're right. I never talked to him anymore. I said, and went and hung the pink off. I figured, well, you know, if I'm going to have to do that to clear my throat chakra, I'm breaking any dick will do, and I'm not sucking that, gurus. And pickups was right there, and he was starting to feel better. And he quit being such an asshole. And
she was trying to climb off of me when I was sick. I had,
you know, made me sleep on the other side of the
really?
Bed.
There's those people are
I
everywhere.
I had been there for like 20 days already. I got bronchitis, and I ended up very sick for Tuesday and Wednesday.
The very idea being with me scared the shit out of him. He had to take to his bed, and now he lives in New York City.
Yay!
On Sugar Hill in Harlem.
Mm-hmm. Eating
the
tofu cookies.
Yeah, tofu cookies.
Did you do much cooking there
We have a camp that we're with and people took turns. One night I would cook, one night so and so cooked. People pitched in to clean the dishes. We kept it together, just like if you were on a normal family camping vacation in any national park in America. This one just happened to do art and music and set things on fire and then sprinkle a little molly on top. Suddenly the whole thing makes sense, I'll tell you that.
Right?
Yeah. Any sort of inherent, whatever, not making sense in those 10 principles, inherent contradiction, makes sense when you're on acid.
You said burningman.com would be the website.
Sure.
And from there...
People should go to YouTube and just look at YouTube videos.
Yeah, just look at YouTube videos. There's some great ones out there. There's a documentary called Spark. I haven't seen it yet, but there's a whole documentary about it, and there were some French guys out there last year running around.
But we don't know it. Yeah, but we don't.
What it's called or anything.
Yeah, there was a French group that was doing a documentary, but it wasn't the Spark one. So, but anyway.
So maybe there'll be another one next year.
Probably. I would assume that. That's something that anybody would like to get their teeth into. Now you hear the dog again. Probably. Trish can be found at www.menopausalstoners.blogspot.com. And you can find A-Bear at www.blogtalkradio.com/TASH, the Authority Smashing Out. One minute left. What advice would you give? What should be the one thing a person should bring to Burning Man?
A complete knowledge of the Virgin Burner Guide from burningman.com.
Yeah, read the Burner Guide and figure it out. And you do not need half the things on that list.
But you should have.
But bring the ones you want, and be sure to bring something that you'd like to wear to party in. It's a good place to cut loose a little bit.
And dress up.
Yeah.
Radically express yourself, mama.
That's right. I just and buy it at the Goodwill or repurpose, or I don't mean to endorse the Goodwill. Just don't have to go out and buy nothing new. Go look. There's lots of good
make
stuff
out there.
Make your costumes.
Be creative. Even though you're not going to maybe be building a structure your first year there, you can be creative with yourself. Paint
exactly.
And different things.
I did bring some gifts for my friends. My friend Gwendolyn Holden-Berry at daughtersofisis.com gave me some spritzers to give to my friends, and that's something. You do need to think of other people while you're out there. And what are your own gifts? And what gifts can you bring to the community? And I think that's your love and your art.
Well, thank you both, Trish and Tinko. It sounds like so much fun. So I know you've got to take it down.
Fun.
So enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.